Welcome to Mad Gains Live, and today we are talking about truckers against human trafficking. We are going to go through the history of the organization and also a little bit into what exactly is human trafficking. To me, that sounds like something that maybe other countries deal with and doesn't happen here in America. But I have a guest with me today who is going to demonstrate otherwise and then tell us how can we be helpful in this situation. So let me introduce you guys to our guest, the wonderful, her gangster name is Killa. I'm sorry, I had to say that. But it's Kayla. No, it's not Kayla. Oh, no. This is starting out really well. How do we do this? Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Kayla Lanier. I'm co-founder and deputy director of Truckers Against Trafficking.
And how long, so did you establish this organization?
I co-founded it with my sisters and my mom, actually. Yes. So just a basic quick history. My mom sent my sisters and I a book called Not for Sale by David Batstone back in 2007. And she like ordered us all to read the book. And I know you don't know my mom, but you do what she says. So we all read the book and we were just completely horrified, you know, that trafficking still, like that there was slavery in the world. We knew there was injustice. We knew there was exploitation. We knew there was horrible things happening, but I don't think we understood that there was slavery. And after we read the book, we all got together on a conference call because we lived in different parts of the country. And from there, we established our first nonprofit to end human exploitation worldwide. And then when we were studying more, learning more, learning from people that were already involved in this fight, we targeted it down. And in 2009, we launched Truckers Against Trafficking as an initiative of our first organization, because we recognize that truckers are the eyes and ears of our nation's highways. They see things other people don't see. They are trained to be vigilant, and they were already intersecting with victims at places right. that they normally went to as a course of their job, whether that's truck stops, rest areas, motels and hotels, city streets, businesses, loading docks. And if they could recognize what this crime actually was, how these people were affected, that they would do something about it. And so TAT launched in 2009 as an initiative. And then by 2011, it was established as its own nonprofit.
Did you have any experience in trucking beforehand?
No, we did not. Yeah, that was always one of the first questions we were asked early on. Are you guys truckers? No. Are you married to truckers? No. Do you have brothers that are truckers? No. And then, you know, we're like, we're sort of learning. So yeah, I mean, in the beginning, it was a complete learning stage and just taking that humbled approach and saying, we don't actually know this industry. Yeah. And what we found was our partners within the industry, they were happy to teach and they were happy to sort of guide the way. And then what I would tell you is a lot of the programs that we have, a lot of the models that we have that we use were co-created by partners within the industry, partners within law enforcement that said, here's a way in that maybe you haven't thought about. And so we were able to really maximize the impact of TAT and maximize and amplify the voice of TAT through those partners who have been very gracious to us. And now I believe we are mostly accepted as a member of the trucking industry. So now I proudly say that, but yeah. Definitely in the beginning, we were the outsider trying to figure it all out. Yeah.
What do yeah. truckers see that made you start this segment of the organization?
Well, what's funny is my mom growing up, her parents had owned a small motel in El Paso and their main clientele were truckers. And so when we were thinking about what group of people would actually see it, we didn't want to do just a general awareness campaign. There were plenty of those already out there. We yeah. wanted to really be a targeted systems approach. She was just like, you know what? Most of those guys were really awesome. They're really wonderful. If they knew what was happening, they'd do something about it. And so that's why we looked at that. Plus that was coupled with every year, multiple times a year, the FBI do these nationwide raids. Where they are both recovering victims of human trafficking, as well as arresting perpetrators, both the buyers and the traffickers. Mm-hmm. And so one of the places that victims, both child victims, as well as adult victims, one of the places that they were always found in all of these FBI raids were at truck stops. And so we thought, here's where they're intersecting. And here's this group of people that if they were activated and educated about this would in fact make a difference. And that has proved to be absolutely true. So what they are seeing is what most people at first glance would see as prostitution. The people prostituting at the truck stop lots or at motels and hotels where you're negotiating the price on an online advertisement and then going to that location. What we have to understand is that the vast majority of prostitution, both in this country, in the US, as well as around the world, is pimp facilitated, meaning trafficking. It is human trafficking. It is a third party. So human trafficking is the exploitation of a human being through force, fraud, or coercion, either for the purposes of the commercial sex industry or labor trafficking. And so that can be what we see in the US is in our agricultural fields, in nail salons where people get their mani-pedis, in hotels and motels, domestic labor, in people's private homes as nannies, maids, cooks, where we're seeing it in restaurants. That's where we're at construction. We're seeing a lot of labor trafficking there. One of the things that we're probably all familiar with is those magazine sales crews that come through neighborhoods. There's been a massive amount of complaints about labor exploitation, abuse that the people are subjected to within that type of structure. And so that's the labor trafficking we're seeing in the US. Sex trafficking, we're seeing in street-based prostitution. We're seeing in brothels, both the legal ones in a couple areas of Nevada, as well as illegal residential brothels. A lot of children are being sold from within homes themselves. Immigrants that are brought in for the purposes of sex trafficking, they're also being sold typically at brothels and massage parlors. So if you've ever seen those massage parlors with happy endings, almost always a trafficking victim there.
Oh my God.
You're seeing it in a strip club where the traffickers sit out with the rest of the clientele and they're arranging the dates for their victims who are up on stage dancing. And then they are expected to have sex with these different men that have paid the trafficker. You also have it in porn production. Traffickers train their victims through porn. They use their victims in pornography, filming them and then selling those sexual acts. And what we have to understand is a trafficker is using force, fraud, and coercion on these victims. And so they are being beaten within an inch of their lives. They are being threatened. Their family members are being threatened. They're being lied to this entire time. And that's why they're doing what they're doing. And so people always think, oh, it's a victimless crime. It's two consenting adults. That is just not the case.
Wow.
If you look at the studies.
I couldn't imagine someone saying that to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we hear it obviously all the time. And it's just, it's not real. It's not backed up by the data that is out there. That it's not backed up by what law enforcement is seeing. It's not backed up by what victims that finally are able to exit, if they exit the industry. It's not what they're saying. It's the studies on prostitution that have taken place. I mean, you're looking at 89% or higher recognize and acknowledge that they have a trafficker, and then any minor that's being sold for commercial sex. So anybody under the age of 18 is automatically a victim of domestic sex trafficking here in the US. So that's just, there's a protection there because they're kids.
How are they getting these people into our country? Because I'm assuming, and I shouldn't, I'm assuming these are people not from our country, non-citizens being forced into this labor and situation.
No, that's, In sex trafficking here in the U.S., the vast majority of our victims are U.S. citizens.
Oh my God.
They are kids and adults. Yeah, these are U.S. citizens. So these are kids and adults of all races, all ethnic groups here within the U.S. They are people who have vulnerabilities, and those vulnerabilities can be like obvious things like extreme poverty. And so the trafficker comes in and promises food and shelter. It can be our LGBTQIA2IA plus youth who have been kicked out of their homes for coming out. And so they are homeless, or kids that have suffered abuse at home that have run away and are homeless. Wow. The trafficker steps in and says, I'll give you a bed to sleep in. I'll make sure that you're okay. It could be somebody with a vulnerability of a mental or a physical disability, that they have a processing issue that makes them more susceptible to a trafficker's coercive tactics to keep them around. It can be somebody that is undocumented, that is here without proper documentation. So somebody, a foreign national, and so they're able to use deportation against them to keep them in line, and they will exploit them that way. And labor and sex trafficking. But you're looking at people, people of color are predominantly, women and girls of color in this country are then disproportionately used in sex trafficking. So you're looking at people that law enforcement and members of society look at and just say, well, you know, it doesn't look like my child, or it doesn't look like a kid from a good neighborhood, ergo, right. They're choosing it. And that's always this idea is the prostituted person chooses it. They're in it because they're either dirty or gross, or it's just the way the family is, or that they're turning tricks for drugs. But again, the studies do not bear that out. If you look at and talk to any number of survivors of the commercial sex industry or sex trafficking, they will tell you, I wasn't using drugs before I got into prostitution. I started using drugs after as a way of coping with what was happening to me. Because people always think, well, they're being paid, so it's consensual. Just because money exchanges hands does not mean the act is consensual. This is paid rape. You are paying to rape them because they are not there willingly. They don't want to be there.
I mean, if they're there willingly, then they wouldn't want money.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. Yes. You don't have to pay somebody that wants to have sex with you, period. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Period. This is
that's my
mind's being blown here a little bit. So where in the country are like the statistically the heaviest amount of this activity? Because I know that like in the country in theft, I can name off like the top five cities that we commonly see theft in trucking.
Right.
Is that the same, or is this predominantly everywhere? It's kind of hard to pinpoint cities and areas of the country.
Well, in our country, there are calls of both labor trafficking and sex trafficking from all 50 states. So the National Human Trafficking Hotline has received calls from everywhere. And that's urban areas, suburban areas, rural areas. It doesn't matter where you have somebody with vulnerabilities and there's somebody willing to exploit those vulnerabilities, you can have human trafficking, either on the labor or the sex side. Every year, the hotline, the National Human Trafficking Hotline, puts out a list of the five states that have the highest concentrations. I don't like to always give that list simply because, I mean, I'll name some of them for sure, but it's because they have more calls coming in from those states. What right. I look at those states being in the anti-trafficking movement, and most of those states have really phenomenal anti-trafficking efforts.
Oh.
Meaning the reason why more calls are coming from those states is because there's more awareness, there's more law enforcement training, there's more citizenry public awareness training, there's a push to combat human trafficking. So where you have like a major concentration of awareness, you have more calls. So Florida, Ohio, Texas, California, these are some of the states that have a high concentration. But again, I would point to a lot of their really fabulous work combating human trafficking as making up part of those numbers that are coming in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Makes a lot of sense. I'm learning so much from you. So when you are speaking with a group of truck drivers, what do you tell them to be on the lookout for? Or do they naturally kind of know?
Sure. I think there's, again, it's that paradigm shift. This is not just within the trucking industry. This is all of society. It's a paradigm shift away from prostitution is a victimless crime to this is most likely sexual exploitation and I need to care. And so it's, I think they know when prostitution is happening, whether it's the CV chatter about commercial company, flashing lights indicating a buyer, things of that nature. A lot of times the traffickers will run trucker specials at a hotel or motel right off of interstate, where you buy the woman online and then you come to that hotel room and you get your sexual service performed there. Again, that is a trafficking victim that's in that hotel room that you're going to. But what we tell them to look for is this. If there's that CB chatter, if you have a person going truck to truck to truck, knocking on doors, we know that there's a lot of great security out there because we have been working with our truck stop partners across the country. They've increased mm-hmm. security, lighting, vigilance. They've been trained to recognize human trafficking as well, but that does still occur in certain locations. If they see somebody that's talking about a quota or talking about daddy, like, well, I can't go home yet. I got to make 100 more bucks, or, oh, my daddy will be mad if I don't bring home this money.
Oh, wow.
That is their trafficker. That's typically the name. And every victim, no matter how young, old, pretty, unattractive, whatever it is, they all have a set amount of money that they have to bring in that evening, or they don't get to eat again, they don't get to sleep again, and they will get a beating if they try to come home before they don't have that money. So we'll hear sometimes where people say, well, she robbed that guy too. Well, think about it. If that's one less rape, you take a 50 from their wallet, that's one less rape that you have to be subjected to night. And so, they're making that quota any way that they can so that they can get back home and stop doing what they're having to do that night. And they can actually get some sleep and maybe get to eat. And so, if somebody ever says something like that, that's the indicator. Because a lot of the interactions are being done online, if you have a car that pulls into an area, drops somebody off, and then leaves and then comes back 15 to 20 minutes later, that is your trafficker dropping off your victim to the buyer and then coming back once the act is done. If they see an RV or a van or a car of some sort parked out back by the trucks, that's not typical. Most RVers, if they're stopping for the night at a truck stop or a rest area, they're parked up by the store. They're parked up by where the lighting is. So if they're back where the commercial vehicles are, why? Typically that is somebody that is setting up a location, their victim is in there. And so people are coming and purchasing and then going to that vehicle. Wow. So if something just seems off, these are the types of things to be paying attention to, asking those questions. Obviously, if there's ever a minor, we've heard from professional drivers that have said that they were approached by two teenage girls selling magazines in the lot. And that it seemed all on the up and up. He thought it was weird that they were there to try to sell these magazines, but it seemed on the up and up. They even had a magazine sample. But once they had him engaged in conversation, they offered the sex. So that was the way that the trafficker had taught them. Here's how you can be on this space, this business, without being so obvious and not getting run off, right? Or not having the cops called, because it looks like you're doing a legitimate type of business transaction. But then under the auspices of that, they had the offer. So again, anything that just seems sort of out of place like that.
Wow. There were some links that you had sent me, and I'll share them in the comments of this post, of some recent real world example. I'm not saying what you're saying is real world examples, but I can still see someone hearing all this and being like, oh, this must happen in like the urban areas, the tough parts of our country. We're fine. But could you share some examples recently of things in the news or things that you've been involved with of discoveries more of human trafficking?
Right. Well, there was a case. I mean, I'll start with some in just the industry itself, but there was a woman that had met a guy online. He was a professional truck driver. He's not the hero in this story, unfortunately. But he basically, she wanted to get married. They had been dating online. They had met up several times. She wanted to get married. He said, I will get you that engagement ring and propose to you, but you have to give me your two daughters to be with prior to doing that. And so she let him have access to her preteen daughters in order to get that engagement ring. That is trafficking. Mom became the trafficker in that case.
Yep. Oh my
and,
God.
And he became the buyer that was exploiting. Then on the flip side, we have the Kevin Kimmel story. Again, a professional driver who is the hero in this case. He noticed an RV parked back by the trucks. He thought it looked really weird. He was watching it. It had black curtains. Everything was sort of blacked out. He was like, that's strange. He was doing his paperwork, but he kept watching it. He saw somebody look out and then get yanked away. He called law enforcement. Turned out she was a 20-year-old who had been kidnapped out of Iowa, not a big urban area of Iowa. They had beaten her, tortured her, burned her entire body with instruments they had heated on the RV stove. She had run away. In the course of those 2 weeks, they had gotten her back and taken nails and jammed them into the bottoms of her feet so she couldn't run away again. They had been selling her for sex through ads that they posted on Craigslist, and men were purchasing her and then coming to that RV to rape her. And with Kevin's call, Virginia State Police were able to arrive on the scene. They were able to assess the situation, remove her from the vehicle, and she told them everything that happened. And doctors say that if Kevin had not made that call that day, she would have been dead within the next couple of days because they had been starving her and because of all of the infections on her body from the torture. So you have that type of a case. The young woman that I train law enforcement with around the country, she's a survivor. She was a kid that was born in Denver, Colorado, to a parent that just didn't really want kids. And so she was really neglected and got popped around to different family members in Nevada, in Hawaii, in California, back to Colorado, sort of on the circuit. And then at 18 years old, she was trafficked. He waited till she was an adult because there were less penalties for trafficking an adult than a kid. He waited till she was 18, and then he trafficked her on the Las Vegas Strip. And so it looked like she was a high-end escort, but she was being beaten every single night to the point where he had almost killed her in the 4 months that he trafficked her. You have situations. I'm from an area in a suburban offshoot of the city that I'm from here in Oklahoma. We had a group of brothers that was selling their mentally disabled sister because they wanted beer and weed money. And so they were selling her for sex. So it can literally happen in a suburban area, a rural area. It can happen in the big cities. It is happening everywhere. People always say, well, we don't have like pimps hanging out on the street where we live, or we don't have prostitution. What I will tell you is but if you look at how traffickers are recruiting, they're recruiting through and the computer. How many of our kids have a computer in their room and or a smartphone, right? And so they're recruiting through social media apps. They're recruiting through dating apps. They're recruiting online through a number of different venues. Wow. And they are aggressive about it and they're smart about it. So quite frankly, a trafficker can enter our own homes in our child's own room. And they are doing it with great success because we have conditioned ourselves to believe the trafficker is the big boogeyman on the side of the road, or that it only happens in these locations, or it only happens to that type of a kid. And I'm telling you, they recruit out of colleges. They recruit out of malls. They recruit out of movie theaters. They recruit out of pool halls. They recruit kids at bus stops. They recruit kids at school. It literally can be anywhere. And that is why we need to know about it. We need to know what it actually looks like so that we can protect our own kids and then kids in our own communities, as well as adults.
Let's flip this discussion, because we've been talking about the traffickers and we've been talking about their victims.
Right.
Let's flip it around to, could you tell us a little bit about the demographics of those who are purchasing whether it's they are benefiting from slavery or they're purchasing acts of sex, because that's the other piece I feel like is often not talked about is who the heck are these people buying these kids?
And the industry
wouldn't exist if it wasn't a demand.
Bingo. Right. Right. This operates like any other industry. It's supply and demand based. There's not enough willing supply. And so traffickers are the third party business connector that is linking it to the demand. The demand is what feeds the entire industry. And we have always, like historically, we've arrested the prostituted person who typically is a victim. Then we started really hardcore going after the traffickers. Right. But I always tell law enforcement when I'm training them, you could wrap up all the traffickers tomorrow. And by Monday, guess what? There'll you're going to have a whole new batch of traffickers. Why? Because the demand still exists and they are the ones funding it. Human trafficking is a greed motivated operation. It's money, money, money. And in the case of sex traffickers, who's giving them the money? That's the buyers. If you look at studies that have been done on buyers, from Demand Abolition just put out a new study, I want to say late last year, about just purchase buyers of commercial sex or the Johns throughout the country. And they are typically married, they're typically middle-aged, and they are typically white. And so obviously you have buyers of all different racial backgrounds. Obviously you have single buyers. Obviously you have young buyers. I mean, they have buyers that are 17 years old all the way up to 85 years old. So it's the whole spectrum. Anybody can be a buyer. But if you're looking at the core group, married, middle-aged, white, in this country, because who's the predominant race in this country? It's Caucasian, right? So that's what we're looking at. It's people with expendable income that they're going to be able to hide from their spouse. Typically it is people that are doing it as a once a month reward to themselves, or your constant buyers that are purchasing multiple times a week. Or every day. You have ones that just do it on a celebratory night, or when they're out of town on a business trip and they don't want their, you know, nobody's going to necessarily know that. So those are the buyers. They are, when they've done sting operations on buyers, and these are buyers that are sometimes just going for what they consider as an adult, consensual, victimless, and the buyers of children that recognize they're going after a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old or whoever, what they have found is their coaches, their pastors, their doctors, their construction workers, their dentists, they are business people, they are teachers, they are a factory worker, they are anybody, But again, that main demographic, married, middle-aged, white. That's your main group of buyers in this country.
Okay, now let's ask one more question for you. And this is not a question that is consistent with my beliefs. This is a question that I know someone is going to ask you. So I'll ask it, which is, okay, there is this demand out there. Sounds like the demand is not going away. Is there a way, similar to the proposal with legalizing drugs, is there a way we can legalize prostitution, make it safer, eliminate this trafficking, eliminate these minors? Again, this isn't consistent with my beliefs, but the question, I mean, somebody's had to have asked you this question before. What has been your ideas and response and recommendations?
Yeah. So, I mean, the obviously, I mean, we've heard that before. Well, if you just legalize prostitution and regulate it, nobody will get hurt anymore. Sex trafficking will just disappear. Again, completely inconsistent with all fact and all research that's been done in countries that have legalized prostitution. And there are plenty of countries that have, in fact, legalized prostitution. What they have seen is that the demand increases. You think about that. There are people that do not purchase commercial sex because of the stigma surrounding it, because they could have a penalty, a criminal penalty for it, because a family member can know. So when that barrier has been removed and prostitution becomes one more option for your Friday night fun, what they have found is demand for commercial sex has in fact increased. What they have also found is supply has not willingly increased. So what you have is, in a country that has legalized prostitution, you don't have more women running out and saying, oh my gosh, what a great career choice. I'm going to go do that. Of course not. What you have is an increase in sex trafficking because your demand has increased and there's not enough willing supply. And so your traffickers step in bring the supply that the demand is requiring. So it in fact has the opposite effect. It exasperates the trafficking issue. And also, you know, let's take sex trafficking out of it. I mean, although you cannot you know, separate them, but let's take sex trafficking out of it. Let's say it's a completely willing supply and a completely willing demand, which is delusional, but let's say that that actually happens. Do we want to live in a society where a blowjob is marketed along with a burger and a beer dinner meal? Do you want to raise your daughter in that? Do you want to raise your son in that? Do you want to be a woman existing in a society where there is a price tag on your sexual accessibility? I don't. And I don't think most of us, when we think about that, in Germany, which has famously legalized it, that has these mega brothels, they've had to increase the degradation that they have put out there because people are bored with the status quo. So now they have, you pay a flat rate euro fee and you can have as much sex as you want in this 24-hour period. What they have found is so many women in these legal brothels are in fact trafficking victims. Their traffickers are still expecting them to bring in money. They have to give half the money to the house and then the rest of the money to their trafficker. They're still being abused and then they're being brutalized by these buyers who see them literally as existing for their sexual pleasure. And there is no concern for her pleasure, her comfort, even. There is no, they do not care. It is, they are cattle at this point. They are there for a explicit perfect purpose. And it does not matter how they feel, what they think. And when you look at, again, the research on people that have exited prostitution or that are still in it, but certainly that have exited it, what you have is a rate of PTSD that is as high as veterans returning from combat.
I can imagine.
We are not talking about a easy office career where you don't have these traumas. This is massive trauma. And that PTSD number is not different for a trafficking victim than somebody that by choice got into the industry. It's the same. So even if they got into this commercial sex industry by choice, they are leaving it the same way a trafficking victim is, with massive complex trauma, with massive disease-ridden bodies, oftentimes with complications, with reproductive abilities, with just psychological issues, borderline personality disorder, all sorts of things that they've had to figure out how to split their psyche to deal with that level of trauma on a daily basis. I mean, this is not something that we want to purport out there as a great career option, you know, and I find it fascinating that it's only ever a career option for a woman that's down on her luck, or for a transgendered person who just can't find another job. Let's push them into the worst possible. Like if a guy's down on his luck, well, let's figure out how we can get you some career, or you can go do this hard labor over here. It's only ever an option for the people that are already oppressed in society. And while American women, we do have a ton of rights and a lot more freedom than most people, when you look at this historically, it has been women that have, and around the world still today, and here in the US, it is people with more vulnerabilities. It is people with a lack of education. I always say it's not an equal footing. You have people with more education, with more money, with more options, with more power, buying people who typically have less education, less money, less power, less voice. This is not consensual. This is not equal. You have something terrible going on here, and it's exploitation, and there is no way to get around it. And if we could eliminate the buyer, we can eliminate sex trafficking, because we will eliminate the victim and all of that. And Tat did come out with a man-to-man video, which is free and available on our website for men. And it's not a yelling sort of judgmental type of thing. It's men talking to other men, quite frankly. It's men talking about and exploring these myths around prostitution, these myths around what it means to be a man. And it's just men talking to other men. It's a 30-minute video available online. We would, you know, ask.
I'll put the link in the comments.
Yeah. People to, you know, watch that with their sons, to have these conversations with other guys, if they're involved in a men's church group or a porn recovery group or anything like that. It's a great tool where it just starts to make you think about some of these things that have been put out there as norm and as regular, when in fact it's definitely not. And we believe that most men are protectors. Most men want to do the right thing. Most men aren't buying commercial sex and aren't exploiting women. But what I have found is most men have been very quiet.
Quiet about it.
And so the power of TAT is these men becoming empowered and educated about this and taking a verbal stand. And they are talking to other men, and they are, we have some actual truckers in that man-to-man video as well as other professional men. But they're in there talking about these things and really verbalizing it and challenging these types of ideas that are just sort of accepted. And that is how we change the world. It is one conversation at a time. It is man to man where we start to restructure and rethink these things. It's that paradigm shift that will lead us to a world where truly everyone is safe and a world without exploitation.
I love that. I love that you've given us the avenue of how we could be helpful too. Just making videos like this and having these conversations. And I'm so glad that I've met you. You are definitely doing your calling. Like this is, you are changing lives every day. That's absolutely amazing.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to put your contact information in the comments here. I'm going to put that video that you were talking about, which I think is quite brilliant, in the comments as well. And you guys, like this organization is a major organization. I've seen them everywhere. And so if any way you guys could help, I think they can probably go to your website. I'm sure you have the availability for people to donate to. I'm just assuming here.
Yes.
I'm sorry to
big put red banner says donate.
Okay, good. Because this is the one
spot where
we know.
And we actually have a matching grant for the end of the year.
So do you really?
That would be helpful.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
$100,000 from the Burger North Foundation.
Nice. Because this is the one spot where we know, like, you know how you donate money and you don't actually know what it's going towards, but we know, and we have the face, and we know what's going to happen. And we know who we're helping out. So thank you very, very much. And
thank you. I really appreciate it.
Who wants more information? Everything will be in the links.